We explore the demand for fur across the world and what happens to mink pelt production in Wisconsin in light of the COVID outbreaks on mink farms early on in the pandemic. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Also, new reports have surfaced by National Geographic and the Detroit Free Press documenting animal-human spillover cases. We'll get to that. According to the trade group Fur Commission USA, Wisconsin leads the nation, generating well over 1 million pelts a year. What questions come up for you about mink farms and the industry? 800-642-1234. Charles Hobbs is Executive Director of Fur Commission USA. Charles, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
Yes, let's look first at these developments about the animal-to-human COVID transmission here in the U.S. Four people infected were from Michigan who likely got the virus from mink. What has been your response from farmers? What are you hearing?
Yeah, so, you know, I guess the response is we know that, like, you know, mink and other species, you know, and like cats, dogs, tigers, lions, non-human primates, white-tailed deer, and others can get COVID. And they all have the potential to spread it to humans. So it's not something that I would say is unexpected. And so it's, I think to the public, it can seem unexpected, but in the scientific community, it's not. You know, three out of four of the emerging diseases are, you know, we get from animals. So it's pretty typical in science.
Well, there was something surprising out of this because we learned through National Geographic that the CDC hid the mink to human spillover information. How would this news change the way that you work with and support mink farmers in Wisconsin?
Yeah, so we, you know, we're, as an organization, and the farmers, we all try to be really good stewards of the mink, of the animals, of the land. And part of that process is we have within our organization to support the farmers, we have veterinarians that the first thing a farmer does when there's an issue is they contact that veterinarian and they say, hey, look, I need testing if they see something abnormal. For example, if they see respiratory issues and they suspect that it could be COVID, they contact our vet and then testing happens immediately. But yeah, and we've been pretty rigorous at it. They've, you know, all the farms that were identified with COVID was due to farmers reporting it.
Rigorous mean? Can you go into that?
Yeah, so when it, like, if we start at the beginning, so in 2020 in August is when, so the USDA announced that we had the first confirmed cases of COVID on mink farms, and it was one in Utah. So over the next few months, it was a total of 17 farms at that time that in the US that had tested positive for these cases. And I remember one of these farmers I was on the phone with, and I said, what does it look like? What's the process like? Mm-hmm. And he says, yeah, we have the CDC here and they're in their hazmat suits and they're walking through our farms testing mink and they're observing. And he says, it looks like something you'd see on TV. Like it's a CDC zone where they're, you know, it's quarantined. So yeah, that's what that rigorous process looked like. And then we had follow-up tests as well. And which of all those farms tested negative down the road?
Is there mandatory testing for COVID on all mink farms? What is the status of that?
Yeah, that's a good question because I think that's what's on the top of everyone's mind. So just to kind of set the stage, there hasn't been any variants of interest or of concern that have been found on mink farms.
Here in the U.S. or are you talking about Europe?
Yeah, I'd say, you know, I can't really speak for the European associations and farms, but for in the U.S., you know, we have multiple USDA agencies are doing research, not only in the mink, but other susceptible species like the white-tailed deer and mice to better understand it. But right now, what we're doing to be part of the solution, you know, we're always wanting to be, you know, good citizens. And so the USDA, along with Fur Commission, we're in the process of developing guidance policies for a farm surveillance program. So the aim is to have the policies in place this year. And this program will be a joint effort between the USDA, the CDC, and state animal health organizations. Kind of a little bit of a pilot program is the state of Oregon. They've already established a farm surveillance program in the fall of 2021, which all the farms in Oregon were surveyed and tested, and they were found to be negative for the virus. So that's what we look for in the future, is so they can get a better understanding of this disease within
so
the mink population.
How often would inspectors go onto farms through this farm surveillance program, and how often are inspectors going on now?
Yeah, so right now in Oregon, if you look at what they're doing there, but it's usually around before the processing of before the harvest is when they do the inspections.
And that harvest is in the fall.
Yeah.
Okay.
In fall.
Uh-huh.
So, but the program we'll have now, it's still in the beginning stages, but it's been said that it will mimic essentially other agricultural surveillance programs. So what's that going to look like? I think those details are still to be ironed out, because I think this is a little bit of a unique situation. So I think that's to be heard.
Chalice Hobbs with us, Executive Director of Fur Commission USA. This is an organization representing U.S. mink farmers, Wisconsin leading the nation in mink pelt production. Taking your questions about the industry, about what has happened in COVID, 800-642-1234. One of our reporters, Hope Kerwin, spoke with Valerie Zimbel, who works for her family's mink farm in Sheboygan Falls. And here she is talking about what her farm is doing to protect workers and the mink against COVID.
We actually do more than what's required of us. You know, we vaccinated all of our mink twice, and they've been boosted, all paid for by the farmers.
So can you go into a little bit about the vaccination for mink and the vaccination for COVID? What is this and how has it been carried out?
Yeah. So how this has played out is, so Zoetis, they're the world's largest producer of animal vaccines, and they developed and distributed a vaccine for mink. And so when they did that, it was early 2021. So since then, 95% of the U.S. mink population has been vaccinated against COVID. So more than, you know, the human population in the States. So it's pretty impressive. And what goes to credit, in my opinion, to these farmers is that they covered the cost 100%. So the vaccine has been shown to be safe. It's effective in mink. Due to the successful utilization of it. And they're actually, it's been interesting because they've used this vaccine after they've watched it and they tested it on mink, and now they're using it in non-human primates, lions, tigers, and in zoos. So it's kind of it's been a collaborative effort, you know, monitored with the government and the CDC and USDA.
And the CDC says monitoring COVID outbreaks and variants in wildlife is now critical. How big of a concern are farmed mink interacting with wild animals and spreading COVID through that way?
Yeah, and I think this is a good question that comes up a lot. So if we look at the evidence and what's been done, so Like Valerie said, there's mink farms have strict biosecurity measures and practices in place. We've even pre-COVID, it's always been necessary. In fact, a lot of these sheds, they have to have locks, they have to be able to be closed, perimeter fences, to assure that, you know, nothing comes in and nothing's getting out. However, with that said, you know, nothing's perfect, and sometimes, you know, an animal can get loose. So if you look, they've trapped three mink outside of infected farms, and those mink tested positive for low levels of the virus. Since then, over 100 animals of various species have been trapped and tested in proximity of those positive farms, with no detection of the virus. And there are no confirmed or suspected cases indicating that the COVID virus or related mutation spread from the farmed mink
And
to other wildlife.
what state are you talking about here? Where this happened, or can you
Yeah,
give
this was Utah.
Utah?
Just to get
Okay,
it,
okay.
yeah. Yeah, because like in Utah, there was about 12, is where the and that's where it first broke, where they first saw the cases in COVID and mink.
So what happens, like when we saw Denmark, the largest European fur producer, the entire mink population, they called it 17 million animals culled
Yeah.
in the early stages of the pandemic. What has happened here on U.S. mink farms when there is an outbreak?
Yeah, Denmark, and it's a little different too. So our industry, it's kind of difficult to compare with the Danish past mink industry. Denmark was they're producing almost 10 times the mink that the US did in a land area about half the size of Maine. So within that small area, there were over 5 million people and 1,200 mink farms. And the US has, a little over 100 mink farms that are isolated in outlying rural areas spread out through a dozen North American st or northern states. So it in that sense it is very different when you're looking at the bird's eye view of it. The Minister of Ag over there in Denmark, she was forced to resign over the legality of the move and in the face of scientific evidence
But
demonstrating there is a minimal risk. Yeah.
even there isn't an apples and apples compare, to Denmark. What is the policy here in the U.S. on our mink farms in the U.S. when there is an outbreak of COVID? Is the
Yeah.
entire animal population on that farm culled?
No, they are not cold. There are quarantines and testing is what we do right now, and monitoring.
Challis
So
Hobbs with us leads the trade group Fur Committee, representing U.S. mink farmers with about 275-ish farms in 23 states, including the leader, Wisconsin. Still time to talk about the future of the mink industry. What you want to know about it, 800-642-1234. Back in a minute with Challis Hobbs here on the Ideas Network. It's the morning show. I'm Kate Archer Kent. Health officials believe four people in Michigan infected with a COVID strain linked to mink are the first known animal-to-human transmissions here in the U.S. That was reporting this week in the Detroit Free Press. Additional reporting this morning out of New York Times, talking with the CDC, that samples of the virus collected from these four people contained two mutations that scientists have hypothesized maybe signs of adaptation to mink. Join in your questions, 800-642-1234. Challis Hobbs leads the industry trade group Fur Commission USA with us for about 10 more minutes. Let's bring in Lynn now in Westby. Hi, Lynn. What would you like to bring up?
Good morning. I know this tends to be a bit controversial, so I'll just head that off. But when I hear a word like cull or harvest, I think of plants, not mammals.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm wondering if there's a more humane way to euthanize mink that are being harvested for fur or being culled because of a contagious disease.
Lynn, thank you for that question. Challis.
Yeah, that's a good question. Thank you. It'd be interesting to hear how people think that mink are harvested as well. But if we look how we do it, I grew up on a mink farm and a cattle ranch, and we worked with the local dairymen and poultry people around our area. And so I've been around a lot of ag. So what we do in terms of harvesting is we actually do it according to the Animal Veterinarian Medical Association and their recommendations. So we euthanize all the mink farms in the U.S. use cooled, pure filtered carbon monoxide. So it puts them to sleep. And, you know, I've been on the farms and they do it. And it's actually a peaceful process watching it. They go in and within a minute, they're expired. So and you contrast that to other forms of how animals are harvested. And in my opinion, it is humane how I've seen it done.
And this is sensitive. So do please take care as you listen. But there have also been electrocution methods. Are those used?
No, in the U.S., we do not use any electrocution. Other myths that are out there is that there's live skinning. We do not do that. That would be cruel and inhumane. And so we do not support any methods like live skinning and the such like that.
You know, as growing up in the industry on a mink farm, I'm wondering, do you see this as a legacy business, a legacy industry passed down through a family, generations? Or do you see new people, new farmers going into mink farming?
Yeah, you know, I would say mostly it's legacy. It's not abnormal to see three generations working together on farms. You know, my family's farm was started by my great-grandmother. They had a dairy farm, and you know, in Wisconsin, there's a lot of stories like that. And in fact, the most famous and most highly paid for mink pelts in the world come out of Wisconsin. So there is a very deep legacy. And then there's new guys jumping in too. I have three friends that are my age that have just started, and they're in their 30s. So yeah, it's a little bit of both, but mostly legacy, I'd say.
As you look at what's happening in Europe, as you look at trade in mink pelts, we're seeing over 15 European countries have introduced legislation to ban or phase out mink farming. What does that mean for the market here in the U.S., and is the U.S. far behind?
You know, in terms of market, it comes down to supply and demand. So that's what dictates the market. And our biggest market for U.S. producers is exports, just like a lot of ag. You know, a lot of it's being exported to, and our main market is Asia, followed by Russia and Ukraine. So, which culturally, and they accept and they use and they love animal products, and we're happy to supply them. But the other thing that we do to make sure we can give our consumers assurance that what we're doing is good is that we have, we've always had animal welfare at the top of our minds. And, you know, we have humane standards and certification programs that are applicable for all U.S. producers. And they've been peer reviewed by PACO, which is the, you know, they're the Professional Animal Auditor Certification Organization. And so it's an international team of animal welfare experts have certified our certification program. And then farms are third party inspected by Validus to assure compliance.
Yeah. I want to jump in here. When you say your major export markets are Asia, Russia, Ukraine, and I'm wondering about the impact of sanctions on Russia. I'm wondering about the war, Russia's war on Ukraine. What impact will that have on mink farmers across the U.S. and here in Wisconsin?
Yeah, it does impact it. Like I said, it all comes down to supply and demand. In 2021, just to give you an idea, mink pelt prices increased over 100% over the previous year. And the season before that, mink prices increased 60%. So the market's cyclical and it was on its way up, but with the, you know, with COVID shutdowns in Asia and in China mostly, and then you look at this, you know, this terrible Ukraine-Russia conflict, it is impacting sales. And that's something we are monitoring, and it's yet to play out, but it definitely will affect demand.
I would imagine that come the harvest time, that would significantly affect where you can export your product, your mink pelts to. I mean, that would have a huge effect, especially amid the sanctions to Russia.
Yeah. Yeah, you're right. Like luxury goods, mink's considered a luxury good, and that is one of the things that has sanctions on it for Russia right now.
Let's go to Becky in Hustisford. Becky, hi.
Oh, hello. Thank you for taking my call. I know we're right near the end. I just wanted to comment on the fact that I deeply respect my friends who are vegan and who are Buddhist, and the dilemma of using animals for any kind of consumptive product is something that each one of us has to morally deal with. But sometimes we have a tendency to focus on things like fur and find that abhorrent, and yet turn around and eat a hamburger with great gusto or consume meat on a regular basis. One thing that often isn't focused on is the fact that furs are a consumable, renewable resource that don't produce PFAS. They don't produce plastics that would become microplastics in the environment.
And Becky, thank you. We are out of time, but Chalice, a few moments here to respond to Becky.
Yeah, you know, I would just like to echo that. You know, in Wisconsin alone, the mink farmers consume over 1 million pounds of byproduct that is not consumable by humans. Over 25 million of that is Wisconsin cheese that's not fit for human consumption. So yes, they are recyclable, and the fur garments are biodegradable, but they can last for generations. So I agree with her. It's a great renewable resource.
Chalice, thank you for joining us.
Yeah.
Chalice Hobbs is Executive Director of Fur Commission USA. It's a trade group for U.S. mink farmers. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. This is The Morning Show, and you're listening to the Ideas Network.